My friend Kirk, was Donald Trump accurate when he said, when I'm in the White House, we'll all be saying Merry Christmas?
Well, number one, he couldn't do that. But number two, somebody ought to tell him what Christ Mass means.
Yeah. That it is an entirely pagan holiday based on the birth of the Son of the Sun. Mm-hmm. And it was celebrated, of course, by Dionysus and Bacchus and Tammuz and Osiris. Because as the son of the sun, they were conceived the day that the days started to grow longer. Mm-hmm. It's the winter solstice. It's a celebration of pagan religion.
Right.
And so if you want to go out there and be celebrating pagan religion because it is pagan religion is integrated with your perception of your country, that's your business. But I'll guarantee you, I won't be saying it.
No, I guarantee I won't either. And the old Mesa cakes, the round things, they baked in round circles for the sun god. You know,
yeah.
Have at it.
Oh, yeah, and of course, it's 9 months after the sun, while it's in the constellation of Taurus the bull, impregnated Mother Earth on Ishtar, another of those pagan religious ceremonies. And, of course, you know, if you wanted to actually pay attention to what's in your Babel, why don't you look at the seven invitations that you know I want you to attend, none of which a single Christian honors. Not a clue. Not one. They don't attend any of them, and yet they claim to be followers of Christ, a name that they don't even have a clue doesn't apply to him. He was Torah observant. He attended them. How can you follow him and ignore them and celebrate Christmas and Easter? He didn't celebrate Christmas and Easter.
Yeah, he even took the day off on Saturday. What a concept.
What a concept.
Hmm.
It is just disgusting what we have become and what would cause people to rally around a presidential candidate. And of course, Trump's only saying it because he wants to appeal to the wacko Christian right.
Have you ever looked up the symbol for Starbucks?
No, I mean it's a lady, but who is that lady?
It's a great thing, I believe. Terry looked it up. It's a great thing, and it's for addiction. It means addiction.
The addiction?
I thought it was quite funny.
As in proper speech?
Mm-hmm. No, addict. Addiction.
Oh, addiction. Oh, addiction.
No, a dope addict or something.
Oh,
like
addiction. That's great.
Product.
Yeah, of course, because many of us are quasi-addicted to coffee. In fact, I think there are people actually addicted to coffee their cup of coffee, just that caffeine fix in the morning, or they're not really functional.
No, at least they know what they're doing.
Yeah.
They want you to get addicted to their brand.
Yeah.
So.
Now, the fact that the Starbucks wants to have a red cup and not a red cup with the Christmas motif, you know, the Christmas motif that was previously on the cup was the Christmas tree.
Was it?
Yeah, what does Yahweh have to say? Because he's really explicit about the Christmas tree in Jeremiah, Yirmiyah. Really explicit. What does he have to say about the Christmas tree?
He says, don't cut one down and drag it into your house and decorate it like the pagans.
Yeah.
And you have to prop it up because it'll fall down on its own, and then you virtually worship it.
Yeah.
He says, don't do that.
Don't do that. You know, so somebody that's celebrating with a Christmas tree, and here they think they're doing it as part of this religious celebration, and they're going to honor their religion. And God says, don't do that. That's moronic. It's not just moronic. It's pagan.
Yeah. It's the symbolism. It's the symbolism of it. Who are you representing in your house? Who does your house belong to?
Right.
Who's, yeah.
Well, obviously, from the Christian perspective, that house must belong to the pagan religions of yesteryear. We have Ivan having called in from Ohio. Ivan, you have a comment or question on any of this?
I find your show very interesting, and though I guess there wasn't that much that I wanted to talk about.
Okay. Well, you're welcome to listen there. Ivan, why don't we talk a little more, Kirk, about what God had to say? We were covering the sixth proverb, which is our Heavenly Father's advice to His children. Now, this particular child, you can tell, is not part of the covenant because he's talking to them about things that you absolutely could not be engaged in if you were part of the covenant. So that means that who he's talking to here is Israel.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you might say, okay, well, since, and he doesn't, by the way, name them. He just says, my son. But if he was talking to Israel, you could discount it as, you know, if you're a Christian, because you'd say, well, that doesn't apply to me.
Mm-hmm.
But what does Israel mean?
One who strives with God, man,
yeah.
Or a person.
Yeah, one who engages and endures with God.
Endures with God, right.
Yeah, Israel.
Uh-huh.
So if you don't want to be that, then you can feel free to ignore it. If you don't want to be God's son or daughter, feel free to ignore this. It begins, my son, if, on the condition, or as often as you have, at some point given a pledge, and you have joined in to be accepted, in association with your immoral country, then you have bound yourself to having shaken hands with that which is illegitimate and unauthorized, foreign, and estranged from the palm of my hand. There's a lot of things here, Kirk, that I want to consider. The first is that while we, and I don't think we'll be as diligent all the way through on everything we're going to cover here, but if a listener realizes how much information there is in the detail, in the etymology of these words, if they're versed on the shadings and the nuances that can be gleaned from the stems and the conjugations and the moots and the roots, then they're empowered at first to determine whether or not we're translating this correctly.
Mm-hmm.
But they're also empowered to go off on their own and translate, something that you do now regularly.
Well, yeah, I have about 25 pages of the same stuff you just did, not as eloquent. The illustrations are better.
Yeah. Now, here's the speaking of illustrations, the first word, ben. It was suffixed with a yod, which is the hand of God. Drawn is the hand of God. It's a, as you know, the yod is an arm, upper arm reaching down, a forearm reaching out with an open hand. That's how the yod is drawn. It's the first letter in Yahweh's name. So ben here is suffixed with the yod. So this is Yahweh's hand is reaching down and out to his child, Ben. Do you know what the two letters are that comprise Ben?
Of course, it's the Bet and the Nun.
Okay, and what do they convey graphically?
Well, you have a family tent, a household, a place, the home, the family mm-hmm. home, and a nun, which is a seed for continuance, ongoing.
Yeah, drawn in the form of, actually, I know that they say in the lexicons, and I probably parroted this, that it's a seed. But
yeah,
which directions do the roots go?
Yeah, they go usually sideways.
Sideways, so they go down. Yeah, if you're going to plant a seed, the roots, the only way they go sideways is that there's multiple sideways.
Mm-hmm.
If you're going to have one root, it's going down.
Mm-hmm.
You know, pull out a dandelion sometime.
Yeah, a lot of dandelion straight down.
Yeah. Pull out a carrot sometime.
Right.
And so this is a squiggly line with a head at the end of it. It's drawn exactly as we depict sperm today.
Mm-hmm.
And the other is a home. So this is a child born into a home. And so that's what son is. So you can use the depiction of the letters, the graphic representation of the letters, to know what these words are. And in this particular one, it's God's hand reaching down and out.
Right.
To this child born into the family, into the home.
Nice. Right.
Yeah. So that's a pretty powerful start. Now, the second word was im. I translated it as if. It's a conditional phrase.
Mm-hmm.
It means that it's not God saying that everyone has given a pledge to an inappropriate institution that's estranged from him. But most of us have, and it says, if you have, then this applies to you.
Right.
Now, what's interesting here is that the word for pledge, if you've given an oath, if you've given a pledge, is Arab. Now, there's a lot we can learn from Arab. it's one of my view, it's one of the most intriguing terms in all of the Torah prophets and Psalms. And if you don't, if you're really not diligent, you'd never know this. But you know that Arab is a compound of AR, which is the
Rosh.
Yeah. AR and B. AR means adversary, foe, enemy.
Right.
And the letter Beth, B, is either home, if it's a noun, or means with, by, or in as the preposition, which is how it's more commonly used. For example, Babel is with Baal. Baal is the Lord. It's the name of Satan throughout the Torah prophets and Psalms. Or it can be the letter itself is pronounced Beth, and it means family or house, so it'd be the house of the Lord, who is Satan, or with Satan. That'd be the name of the book that Christians carry around. Now, it's interesting in the first regard, in terms of the house of the adversary. Do you know that how Muslims divide the world?
Well, it's them and us.
Yeah. Dar al-Islam versus Dal al-Harb. The house of Islam against the house of war. So Muslims have defined the world exactly as the word Arab depicts it. Now, if you just look at the stated components that make up the word Arab, it means with the adversary. It is describing every enemy of God, but most especially institutions and individuals inspired by HaSatan, who is the adversary. It's just like Bible is with the Lord, so that's the religious presentation of Satan. Well, this is now deliberate, in your face, with the adversary. Now, I find it interesting how all these pieces verse together. First, openly acknowledging that he has been demon-possessed, Muhammad's God was modeled directly after Satan. And as a result, the Quran becomes the most anti-Semitic book ever written. Then, trying to convince an unthinking world that criticizing Islam is racist and bigoted, as opposed to educated and rational, Arab and Muslim have been promoted as being synonymous. Now, we'll go to the logical conclusion of this when we return. Kirk, as you heard, you can join and use your military skills to save America by being part of the GCN team. And although they don't say what the product is, it's longevity, the pyramid scheme to sell overpriced mineral and vitamin supplements. The reason I'm leaving GCN, those claims are so outrageous, so despicable, that I don't want to be associated. And that's what this proverb is saying, is that you ought not be associated with such deceitful and dishonest individuals. That is such an outrageous lie that you're going to save America and you're going to use your military skills to do so. It's preposterous. It's disgusting. Now, I read something this morning. Do you know that 10% of the inmates on death row for having committed the most heinous mass murders are veterans?
I did not know that, no.
Yeah. And half of the vets from Afghanistan and from Iraq are receiving counseling on post-traumatic stress syndrome.
Yes, I have relatives that are that way.
Wow.
Nephews.
Yeah, 600,000 Americans are receiving medications and treatment and government subsidies now for post-traumatic stress. And, you know, the vast preponderance of those never saw any embattled stress. So their stress is either make-believe or just that conflict that exists between truth and reality in the U.S. military.
Well, I had a father, a grandfather, talking about his son who went to Afghanistan, and he came back. And, of course, his father was in the military and knew all these things. But when they would sit down and talk, he was talking about the horrors he saw, and all he was doing is walking down the street. I mean, it's just disturbing terribly. So,
yeah, little boys and girls being being raped, and animals being tortured.
Yeah, you name it.
Yeah, what Islam has done to a culture, and yet we sent Americans over there to save them, to turn them into Democrats. No wonder they're battling sanity. Well, this word Arab is so interesting because now that Arab and Muslim have been promoted as being synonymous, we have to realize that Yahweh told us that this would occur 1,600 years before Islam was invented, correctly labeling the people and the wannabe God that would become Israel's most adversarial foe. And mankind's greatest foe, actually, committing 99% of the world's terrorist acts.
So you've gone through three words, and already it's remarkable.
Yeah. Yeah, Arab means with evil, with the adversary.
Yeah.
With the evil adversary.
Yeah.
But there's more to Arab than Arabs and Allah. Most Americans have said the Pledge of Allegiance, and there are countless other ways that we can Arab demonstrate our allegiance. A profession of faith, an oath of office, a vow to serve, a promise to pay, would all qualify and thus disqualify you from participating in the covenant family. That is, unless you take advantage of the remedy, which is to disassociate from and then renounce your prior affiliation. Becoming a member of a church, aligning with a political party, joining the military, even singing the national anthem with your hand placed over your heart would put you on the wrong side of this conditional clause. I don't think there's one American in 1,000 that knows this, Kirk.
No.
And they would actually attack you and I for telling them these things.
Well, they attack us if we didn't do it in a ball game.
Yeah. And yet, Yahweh, who happens to be the creator God of the universe, the fact that this is what he is saying wouldn't matter to them. They would condemn us in the name of God, when in fact what we were telling them is exactly what God said.
Yeah.
Yeah, truth is no longer an alibi. Even engaging in certain types of businesses will get you in cross purposes with God. And that is because one of Arab's secondary definitions is to buy and sell, to exchange one thing for another. Mm-hmm. Therefore, in light of the primary meaning of Arab, doing business with Yahweh's enemies, the enemies of Yisrael, whether it's supplying Arabs with weapons or buying their oil, either would be an issue in need of reconciling. Especially since, as I've said, the God of Islam, Allah, is Satan. You know, the great air show, I think it's the Dubai Air Show, which is this year going to be about 90% military hardware, is all about offering all manner of advanced weapons to Muslims and to Islamic nations. It is the antithesis of what God told us we should be doing. There are even more subtle ways to run afoul of God, especially in societies like ours, devoted to socialist secular humanism, like Europe and America, where Arabs' other implications, such as mixing in and commingling to be accepted, are commonplace. The masses have been conditioned to blend in by way of multiculturalism and tolerance, or face being harassed and ostracized. Academic institutions have persuaded the gullible to believe outright lies in the name of political correctness, most of which are in direct opposition to Yahweh's teaching. If you refuse to accept the deception, you'll be deemed unacceptable to participate in school, engage in business, run for public office, or address the public through the media. You won't even be considered credible. This is what we have done. I'd say that of all of the foes, you know, Bonner's talking about his the credit crunch.
Mm-hmm.
That's a foe. You can talk about the national debt. That's a foe. You can talk about our military out of whack. That's a foe. The police, way too violent. That's a threat. The NSA, spying on everybody. That's a threat. America invading the world and making the whole world worse and being the arms merchants of the world. That's a threat. But ultimately, Kirk, I would say the single biggest threat to America is not Islam. It's not Christianity. It's not politics. It's the dumbing down of the population.
Mm-hmm. McCain, thank you. None of this does any good.
Right. And I think that is the primary impetus of this proverb. Sure, it calls out and exposes and condemns Pauline Christianity. But, you know, what it's primarily calling out is apathy, is ignorance of people just not trying to make a difference. What were you going to say?
No, I was just going to throw in one more thing about Arab. When you look in every lexicon, and I've probably looked through 5 or 6 per each time I sit down, it says the overriding one is to pledge security in exchange for something.
Mm-hmm.
Or to pledge something in exchange for something, but in particular for security. And isn't that what we did with Saudi Arabia?
Yeah.
We pledged to give them security in exchange for their relationship in the oil business.
Yeah.
And when Kuwait came along, didn't we go in and invade Kuwait for them?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I mean it's a perfect depiction of what America has done.
Relationship to them.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And they are, of course, Arab nations.
Mm-hmm. Saudi Arabia,
yeah.
The Southern Peninsula, that's all Arab, right?
Right. Yeah, this is, and God's saying, don't do that. Don't do that. If you're associated with that, you've got some stench on your soul that I'm not going to bring into my house.
Uh-huh.
So you've got to get that stench off of your soul. But I'm here to tell you that political correctness is a similar stench, because if you continue to investigate Arab, then there's 7 or 8 definitions. I mean, Arab is presented, pointed different ways, which the diacritical marks don't appear in the actual test.
Yeah.
But in a bunch of different ways, all with slightly different nuances, all which relate together, and political correctness is absolutely one of the things that it targets. No, I think it's the political correctness, socialist, secular, humanist agenda and education, where people no longer exercise good judgment, where they are no longer logical, where they're being fed lies and accept lies just to mingle in and be accepted individually, to be welcomed in those organizations. I think that's the single greatest threat to humanity, because you can't reason with people anymore.
No.
You know, when the U.S. military was talking about how to solve the problem of the attrition of the chair force, of the drone pilots, you know, that are killing people by remote control, they didn't say that, you know, the solution here is to recognize that what we're asking them to do is immoral and destructive to their souls, so maybe we ought to have them do something else, that would attract more people and be able to retain them. No, they said what we need to do is to change the perceptions regarding the job. The perceptions is what they wanted to change, not the job itself. And I was reading another article this morning about a vet saying that, you know, that the U.S. military spends $7 million a year, and gives $7 million a year to the NFL, for the NFL to have those displays of patriotism. They actually pay them $7 million for those displays of patriotism. And this person said, you know, rather than us doing pretend advertised patriotism, why don't we have an honest discussion about what we're asking our military to do and what the consequence of that is?
But that would imply that you would understand something.
That you could process evidence reasonably and come to a reasoned, logical conclusion based upon a consideration of the facts, as opposed to being played for a fool by paid patriotism, by faux patriotism.
Yeah, because we keep saying, well, what are they thinking? That's absurd. That's crazy.
Yeah, because they want to change the perception.
You say that in radio, television, whatever, and you go, what?
Yes. Now, the next word is really fascinating. Rea is almost always translated neighbor in your Babel. But that's not its primary meaning And that's completely ignorant of its base and also ignorant of the context here in terms of in proximity of era of adversary. You know, so what I've done initially is I just translated fellow countrymen because it speaks of an individual citizen from the same society, race, religion, or region. But we have this. We have a basis here of Rhea, which is actually just two letters. Roshane.
Okay. Roshane.
So Rhea is the perspective of man. That's what those letters convey. The eye, which is perspective, or understanding, and the picture of a human head, which is where we observe, where we talk, where we listen, where we think. This is the perspective of man, Rhea. And it's actually just Ra because it's just two letters. And you know what Ra means in Hebrew?
What is evil?
Sure as yeah, sure as hell doesn't mean neighbor.
No,
it means
but,
evil.
You know, if you think through who he's talking, to Israel, and their neighbors were all the pagan world.
Correct.
So I mean, in that context, but you'd have to think that through.
Right. It's only neighbors by implication, and then but if you make the connection neighbor, you're not talking about your next door neighbor that mows their lawns and plants their posies.
No, exactly.
You're talking about the neighbors of Israel, which were evil.
Yeah.
It means bad, immoral, improper, undesirable, troubling, and harmful. And so if you take the both the proximity, the neighbors were countries that were adversarial to Israel. You take the raw basis of the word, the verbal root of the word, and you put that in context of the fact that it now means country and a citizen. This is a troubling country, a evil country, an evil and improper, undesirable, immoral society.
No argument there.
Wow. So now all of a sudden, we really have an incredibly insightful instruction from God. And he says that when we make a religious or a political or military pledge, we are in effect taka, forming a bond.
Yes.
With an evil human institution. One that is illegitimate and estranged from God's hand. If you actually look at the basis of the words and then put them together, all the pieces fit together. It's one consistent story. And so let's go back to the beginning. My son, if on the condition, or as often as, you have at some point in time given a pledge and you have joined in to be accepted with something that is evil, adversarial, in your association with your immoral country. And Rhea also means loudmouthed and evil public speakers who are your fellow countrymen. You have bound yourself to having shaken hands with that which is illegitimate and unauthorized, foreign and estranged from my hand. Yeah, now we're in a position where God's talking about that when we make pledges to human institutions, we've associated ourselves with that which is adversarial and evil.
Mm-hmm. You become a bondsman.
Yeah, you are. God's going to say, you know, you over there that Donald Trump, who wishes to say Merry Christmas in your country, and you're going to have everybody saying Merry Christmas in your country, have aligned yourself with the adversary. You're evil. And therefore, when he would take the oath of office, should he be elected, he's going to be viewed by Yahweh as someone in opposition to him. So trying to endear himself to the religious, he has put himself in direct opposition to God. That's where we find ourselves. That's where all of those people who take off their hats and put their hands over their heart, standing in attention to in support to honor their military and to sing the national anthem. That's what they do. They put themselves in league with those who are adversarial to God. When Yahweh demonstrated the Exodus, this whole process of taking his people home, what did he free them from?
Religion, mostly, and politics.
Yeah. Mitzrayim was the most religious and political, militaristic place on earth.
Enslavement. Yeah.
Yeah.
All of the things. That, yeah.
Right. He liberated humankind, his children, Bene Israel, which means the sons of Israel, the children of Israel. He liberated them from human, religious, political, and military schemes.
So why do they so quickly want to go back?
Yeah. Well, that's what Yahweh kept on asking the children of Israel when they decided they wanted us all to be their king. He said, why do you want to do that? Why do you want to go back there? You know, I've liberated you from that once. I'm not going to do it again. It is the question as to why no one seems to be able to piece together the story in context. God is leading us away from, inviting us to walk away from, human, religious, and political, and military, and patriotic institutions, because he's not going to tolerate any of that stuff in heaven. Even the second to last word, Kirk, has implications that are worth considering. It's Zar, which was translated, you could be estranged from God's hand, foreign to him. You know, to be foreign to God means you'd be outside of the covenant and therefore outside of heaven. But the letters that comprise Zar, it's a plow and a man's head.
Right.
So would it not be translated by the graphic representations as fields of endeavor plowed by men?
That would be good. Because it's certainly a furrowed line that you're digging up with a plow.
Yeah, and Ron, cutting lines in the sand, you know, all this idea of establishing your country and people fight over borders. That implication would be also true, and how nations separate themselves from God, you know, cutting off God, really, from the people. But this is a pictorial graphic alphabet.
Yeah.
And we looked at the first word, Ben, to demonstrate how appropriate that alphabet is. You know, you've got the first letter of Ben being the family home, Beth, and that's what even with the name of the letter even means family and home.
Yes, it does.
And then Nun, which is the basis of all of the words in Hebrew that talk about children being born with an offspring is drawn in the form of a sperm. I mean, no. Even if you wanted it to be a seed, Zera seed, the Hebrew word for seed is the Hebrew word for offspring.
Yeah.
So, these graphic representations tell us a lot about the words, and yet I don't think there are 1,000 people on the planet today that actually consider what we can glean from these letters, even though this message is written to us by the creator of the universe. It's his alphabet.
Yeah. Well, the emphasis is always on the words. However, you surely pick up a lot of little extra goodies when you study the letters as well.
Yes.
You know, he called himself the word. He didn't call himself the letter. So, I mean, I'm not ridiculous about it.
No.
But, my gosh, when you... So I do the words first and then try to put it together and understand what the translation really is as best I can in English, and then I look at the words.
Yeah, I never start with the letters.
No.
I actually start with the definitions, and I say, okay, now, you know, like raw, the designs, the perspective of man. You know, and it's and you look at the definition, and then you look at the letters, and you go, oh, my. You know, and then Zar, to be estranged, to be set apart, to be cut out of. And you see the man in the plow. You know, it's okay. Well, you know, it's pretty hard to not see affirmation there. And, you know, I care about this stuff because this is our Heavenly Father's advice as to how to live your life and to survive your mortal existence.
Right.
Then he says, you lure others into relinquishing their freedom, and you yourself are ensnared in control by the statements of your mouth. You are caught by the words of your speech. Now, my thought here was that, is there anything that rivals words in importance and influence?
No.
Didn't Yahweh say that he created the universe using...
communication.
Words. Yeah, words. Yeah. He spoke life into existence, spoke the world into existence.
Right.
Doesn't God introduce himself to us in his own words?
Right.
He explains what he is offering and what he expects in return in his word. When you introduce yourself, don't you use words?
Absolutely.
We reveal who we are, what we believe, with whom we are associated, all using words. They literally define us. And that's what God is saying here. Your words define you.
Right.
And while at the same time, they expose our ambitions and our affiliations. Politicians are elected based on their speeches. They establish their objectives in their speeches. Clerics are paid to deliver sermons. Those in public forums like the media earn their living one word at a time. Military officers bark out commands, ordering subordinates to obey.
And thereby start a war.
Yeah. Ultimately, armies march, and to words, and kingdoms are established the same way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's also interesting to note, and we brought this up in a previous program, that, and it's no doubt based on this proverb, Yosha told all who would listen not to give an oath. He said that our yes should mean yes, and our no should mean no.
Mm-hmm.
In spite of this, most every human institution, especially those in Christian nations, require either a profession of faith or an oath of allegiance. So it begs the question, Kirk, why do they consider themselves Christians when they routinely ignore and reject Yosha's advice?
Everything he said.
They do exactly the opposite. And yet they say that they're following him. They're delusional.